This is Michelle.
And this is Andrea.
And we are Black Girls Vibe.
Vibe.
That's right. That's right. Well, welcome back, everybody. We know it's been a long time and we shouldn't have left you, but we are back now. And we are hoping we have a strong beat to step to. So, Andrea, what's been going on your side of things? How's the sports world been treating you?
I think it's been pretty good. It was a, you know, wild end to 2018 with all the college football bowl games, and opened up 2019 with the national championship. So it's been a lot on the football side of the world. What about you?
Much the same. You and I have been in the same boat. I think, you know, we've been grieving the loss that our team took 2 weeks ago in the national championship. Congrats to Clemson. Yeah.
Whew. Definitely.
Jesus. Yeah. Clemson tied into a fairly well. What was the final score, Andrea? 44 to 16?
16, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So we're not going to be able to talk about this song, guys, because it's still kind of an emotional thing for us. But tip of the cap to Clemson. I do think that they exposed, you know, our secondary a little bit, and were able to exploit that repeatedly throughout the game. And, you know, you and I have talked about the fact that we didn't, you know, go to our bread and butter, which is our run the ball offense.
I think so. Yeah, we just kind of moved away from our game plan and tried a few things that just didn't work out. And, yeah, like you said, kudos to Clemson. So we'll see what 2019 has in store for the Crimson Tide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It'll definitely be, I mean, it's going to look different from both a team composition and staff composition standpoint. So it should be a pretty interesting ride, the 2019 season. In other postseason or post-regular season football news, a couple of kudos and congrats to go out to, and I'm going to let Andrea handle the first one since it's her alma mater. So she gets the rights on this one.
I know, yeah. So the wonderful UAB Blazers managed to pull out a bowl victory on top of our Conference USA division title. So 2 years back, after not having a program, it was a definite, you know, big wild ride this season. And, you know, kudos to Coach Clark and Blazer Nation for rounding out the season, and looking forward to big things to come with UAB Blazer football.
Indeed, indeed. And I want to give a shout out to Kentucky football. I mean, they had a tremendously successful season. I think it's 10 wins, a bowl game down at the Citrus Bowl in Orlando back in December. And it definitely made the SEC a more interesting conference to be in, and gave a lot of energy. You know, sometimes it's you know, it's usually like Georgia's been in the conversation as far as is Georgia our bust as far as the SEC East. But thank you to Kentucky and Snell and those boys for making for some interesting games and some interesting conversations throughout the course of the season. So shout out to them.
Yes, definitely.
And with the end of the football season, we are transitioning more of our conversations around basketball. And in fact, Alabama basketball has had a couple of has started its conference play, and I had the opportunity to go see them play and beat Kentucky at Coleman Coliseum a couple of weeks ago.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. How was that experience?
It was good. It was pretty cool. People would be surprised to know I'd never been to the Coliseum before. I love the intimacy and the closeness of it. So I hope to be able to. They play Ole Miss this upcoming week, and I'm eyeing possibly going to that, but I really enjoyed the game. I really enjoyed the atmosphere. I didn't get to get off into concessions or whatever, but you know, I'm sure they're fantastic. I was really impressed with our team. I know that since that game, they've played some other top-ranked teams. They played Tennessee yesterday, I think, and kept it close. I mean, they only ended up losing by 3 points. And there's, I think, at least one other ranked team that they played pretty close, you know, down the stretch. And I think that Ole Miss might be ranked as well. So they're getting into the teeth of their schedule and they're holding their own. So that gives me some confidence. I'm very confident that they can really make some noise in the SEC this year.
Yeah, I think so too. Avery Johnson's done a really good job with that team. And I will say there is a star player from Huntsville, John Petty, who is in his second season, I believe, with the Tide, who's doing very well.
Well, good deal, good deal. So we are gonna focus more of our time and attention on the podcast coming in the upcoming weeks and months, obviously, on college basketball, especially with March Madness not being that far off. And on the professional side, we are pretty close to the midseason point for the NBA, which always culminates with the All-Star weekend, which I believe is in Charlotte this year.
It is. So February 17th is the date of the All-Star game.
Right. And for those of you who like to vote, or one of those fans who like to vote, don't forget that All-Star voting closes, I think, tomorrow, January 21st. And you can go to the NBA's website to vote if you haven't already, but are interested in doing so. Well, what else is going on? We got a little tennis. The Grand Slam season.
We do. A little. Started. Yeah. So we've got Australian Open. So some professional tennis down under.
Yeah. So we, Andrea, had you heard about Federer? What happened this morning? Or what happened today?
Right. Because whatever I don't know. It is.
Yeah.
And how that translates to us. So, no, I have not. And I have a feeling you're going to share some news with me. That's quite disturbing.
Yeah, we probably should have talked about this offline, but he lost. That's my bad. I shouldn't have sprung that on you, like, actually, as we're recording this. But he did lose this morning, so he's our whatever. He lost when he played most recently in the Australian Open, whenever that was. Sometime between last night and this morning for us.
Okay.
So.
See, and that's the beauty of these talks. We just, you get raw emotion
in real time, people. We are giving you our unadulterated, unfiltered reactions. Serena's still in. I think Naomi's still in.
Which is great.
Which is great.
Naomi's Max still in. Still in. Yes.
Sloan's still in. Sharapova's out. I won't get into that.
Excuse me. Yes.
But
not at all.
Kerber lost.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, this is all kind of overnight news, I suppose, for us here in the States. But yeah, she lost. So yeah, there's a lot going on.
Wow.
But Serena, back to her, because you know how much we stand for her. So anytime we have a chance to talk about Serena, this is yet another opportunity for her to tie the record holder, the current record holder, Margaret Court, at 24. Court holds 24 Grand Slams. If Serena wins this Australian Open, she won last year's, if I'm not mistaken. If Serena wins this year, she'll have tied Margaret Court for Grand Slam wins. And hopefully, if she wins this Open, then the next one, she can go ahead and just become the outright leader. That's what we've all been hoping would happen for her in these recent tennis seasons. And speaking of dope women doing dope things, in our upcoming segment, we're gonna bring to you all a friend of ours, a fabulous photographer, Lindsay Witherspoon. She's doing some really incredible things generally, but specifically with regards to sports. And we're back from our break. I want to welcome a friend of Andrea and mine, and one of our supporters of Black Girls Vibe, Lindsay Witherspoon. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So, Lindsay, tell the BGV family a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a professional commercial editorial and portrait photographer based in Atlanta, born and raised in Birmingham, moved over here to kind of give myself a bigger and better challenge when it comes to like the photography world. So it's been a journey, but it was all worth it. So I have clients such as the New York Times, NPR, the New Yorker, and so many more people actually hire me. Like I'm always surprised when I get an email from somebody that's like a dream publication that I've always wanted to work for. So that's me in a nutshell. Outside of, you know, outside of me liking hot dogs, which is like a favorite pastime of mine.
It's a serious thing. Like,
it is a very it is a serious matter for sure. So, okay. Yes.
I have to ask before we continue, what's your favorite hot dog spot?
So I just found a new spot over in, what's that, Decatur. I want to say it's Gus Hot Dogs.
I've heard of Gus.
Yeah, and it was great. I would drive back just to Decatur for that hot dog. So I finally feel like I found my spot in Atlanta for a hot dog.
Well, good for you. Congratulations.
Yes, it only took me 4 years, but I found it.
Only 4 years? You say it's coming time.
Exactly. Well,
listen, we're excited to have you on, and particularly excited to have you on for you to talk about an upcoming project of yours related to the Super Bowl Business Connect program.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I can tell you about the process that it took me to get into it, but how I found out about it was I have some other friends who are, you know, fellow entrepreneurs, and they kept sending me the link to this thing and to the Super Bowl Business Connect. And I also kept seeing it on Facebook as Facebook ads. So I was like, I'm not, you know, I'll try it. I'm always a person where I don't want to regret trying and not even giving myself a chance. So I decided to go through the entire process, and, you know, it was done. And just like a true procrastinator, I applied on the last day. and then after that, you know, a few months went by, and then I received the email to be a part of, you know, their Business Connect system. So that makes me and my business be an official vendor for the Super Bowl. So it's been an amazing opportunity to kind of just connect with other entrepreneurs around the city, as well as those that are part of the you know, official NFL staff. So it's been great so far.
Great. So I know that in addition to having been selected to participate in this, and it sounds like it's a supplier diversity program with an eye on identifying vendors from historically disadvantaged populations.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Minorities, women, LGBTQ. So it's an effort to have a diversified set of vendors. But separate from this, and I know we didn't specifically designate time to talk about it, but you've done some interesting work in photography for sports-related projects prior to this. So can you share with our audience a bit about those projects?
Yeah, so I've done a few things with ESPN, The Undefeated. The one that I love most was that I got to follow Clark Atlanta's marching band around for 3 days. And it was during their homecoming weekend. So you can imagine, you know, you got a lot of people, you have, you know, let me change that. You have a lot of Black people, and they're excited about, you know, just homecoming activities, the band itself. And then just to, you know, give a little bit more context to the story, I was a drum major in high school. So that's why that story was the one.
I forgot that you were a drum major.
Yeah. So that was like a special place in my heart. You know, to spend 3 days with a group of, you know, young musicians who are just trying to make it, you know, and then to also see their drum major at the time, which was a woman, and just the way that, I don't know, it just brought back a lot of memories, and having an opportunity to not only, you know, hang out with them for 3 days and just kind of, you know, form a fast relationship with them, as well as relive my own marching band days. That's the top story that I would say that comes from like the sports area. So yeah, that's the one that really, really sticks out with me.
I'll tell you, Lindsay, as a, I was in the band in high school, and so that is near and dear to my heart. And so I appreciate you being able to tell that story, because a lot of times, and Michelle and I have talked in a previous podcast about, you know, the kind of the historically Black colleges and the classics, but then how the halftime show. So a lot of times you don't hear about the band. So I love the fact that you are a drum major.
Yes. And I think another interesting point about this story was that I shot them at a time where their band had pretty much fallen astray. So it was a super, it's a super small band. I don't know about now because unfortunately I hadn't followed them as much as I should have. But the band was, they were in a true rebuilding stage. And they also had their first first female band director. So it's just a lot of little pockets of like history and nostalgia that came with that story. So yeah, that's the one that's definitely stuck with me throughout this time.
Yeah. Well, that's great. It's dope to hear the two of you kind of band geek out a little bit. I was not the man, so I'm the odd woman out in this conversation.
That's too bad for you. Now you won't, you know. You can't join the club.
No, I know. I'm on the outside looking in. I am on. Well, Lindsay, thank you for your time. Just one more closing question I want to ask you. Do you have any advice for any aspiring creatives or photographers out there looking to do what it is that you find yourself doing now?
That is a good question. Give yourself some grace while you're going through the process. You know, a lot of times people think, and unfortunately we are in a time where if you look at Instagram, you think everything's instantaneous. So your success is not going to be overnight. Like if you are truly in for the game, you just need to, you know, walk through that journey, give yourself some grace, and then trust your process throughout the whole time. So that would be my little tidbit of advice for budding or emerging creatives.
Great. And I'm gonna plug you for a second. Lindsay has merchandise, including really dope Trust Your Process merchandise and t-shirts that are available. Lindsay, tell us your website so folks can check you out and check out your merch and get more information about you.
Yeah, sure. So if you want to see my photography work, go to lindseywetherspoon.com. That's LYNSEYWEATHERSPOON.com. And if you want to check out the Trust Your Process merch and just movement that I'm working on, go to trustyourprocess.co. And that's it.
Friend, all right. Thank you so much.
Appreciate hey, thank you.
I know. Thank you.
And, thanks again. We'll talk soon.
Will do. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye. And we're back.
Yeah, we are. So, Michelle, let's spend a little time talking about the NFL and winding down the season. And we know post regular season, there's always a tendency to have what's called Black Monday with all the firings of coaches, all teams performed for the regular season. And so we know that we clearly saw the carousel of ins and outs and short-term coaches, particularly for our Black coaches and minority coaches, and some of those vacancies. So let's talk a little bit about that. What are your thoughts on, you know, kind of what we saw and who got fired and kind of the vacancies that are either coming up or, you know, have been filled or still kind of open at this point?
Sure. So I think that we lost five coaches of color this time. And I would be pressed to rattle them all off, but I know for Hugh Jackson, but I'm going to try to. Hugh Jackson, Van Joseph, Todd Bowles, Marvin Lewis, and Steve Wilks.
Right. Yep.
And you know, for some of them, I think that the Rooney Rule is just as it's diminished when you have. When you don't have an honoring of the spirit of the rule, as you saw, like with the Raiders last year and the hiring of Gruden, the spirit of it is equally compromised when you keep coaches of color far too long. They've been performing at a middling to poor standard. And I would put like a Marvin Lewis in that category.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that with him, you know, with all the conversation surrounding him in the previous season, and then he came back yet again, and now we're back where we were with him. So he's a classic example. That's a good point.
Yeah, exactly. Like they went as far as to like fire him last season, and then a couple of days or weeks later, they announced that they were bringing him back, and I was really surprised by that. And I wasn't surprised by the outcome of how the season looked for the Bengals, and nor was I surprised that he was ultimately, with some finality attached to it, again let go by the Bengals at the end of the season. So I know that the NFL has tried to shore the rule up some because they realize that the spirit of it hasn't been honored. So teams are now required to go outside of their organizations to interview a candidate or to interview a candidate who's on the league's career development advisory panel list. And I'm assuming, although I don't know for sure, I'm assuming that that list is compiled through their relationship with the Fritz Pollard Alliance, which is an affinity group of former coaches and players who help the NFL kind of identify minority and women candidates.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what those two additions to the rule will do to it from a net standpoint, but we lost five coaches. That leaves three coaches of color, and no new minority coaches were hired in any of the vacancies, which is problematic for me.
Agreed. Same here, because like you said, it's Tomlin still with the Steelers, and Lynn, who had a great season with the Chargers, and then Ron Rivera out in Carolina.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's the short-term coaches who we saw with a year, like Steve Wilks, and now who was it again? Remind me, who was hired in Arizona at the Cardinals?
Cliff Kingsbury, yes.
Yeah, so, and, you know, in all honesty, and we've talked a little bit about it, I had no familiarity with him whatsoever, had not heard the name until all the talk surrounding him and his hiring, which seemed to catch us off guard, and sounds like some other sports pundits as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what I think that Wilkes was fired was disturbing to me and troubling to me. The man had only been on the job a year and was brought into a program that was very broken and was not given, in my opinion, a sufficient opportunity to make the team his own. And he couldn't have turned the thing around on a dime. A year is certainly not enough time to do that. And when you have problems, like when your issues are more your personnel on the team, and that's determined by the GM, and coaches kind of exist at the whim of their GM and the decisions they're making from an acquisition standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, aging, although great wide receiver, and then, you know, the questionable quarterback, and like you said, going back to the personnel, it's hard to kind of give some direction and turn that around in one season without a really good opportunity to do so. So I don't know. Where do you think we go from here? Hopefully, you know, the coaches we saw fired will find positions somewhere else, if not as a head coach, ideally in that role. But I know we've already seen a couple who have found either offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator positions with other teams. But what do you kind of see we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, for example, Steve Wilks goes from Arizona to being the OC or DC at with the Browns. I don't know. It's unless and until coaches have to be really deliberate about who they're cultivating in their coaching trees, right? Like, if you look at a lot of the Black coaches, I think I need to look back at some of my notes on this, but like Tony, like for like the Tomlins of the world, like the Tony Dungys and the Lovie Smiths, like a lot of the coaches that have come up and have actually gotten head coach's job, there are only one or two Black coaches whose trees they fall under.
Mm-hmm.
And so who are the current head coaches, white and Black, and more specifically the white coaches, because they hold the majority of the positions, who's going to be deliberate and strategic about developing minority candidates? I mean, it is something that requires some intentionality. And absent that, I'm not sure that we're going to see any meaningful progress. I'd hate to think that we've seen kind of the Rooney perform at its highest level at peak, never to get back there again. But clearly, when you go from 8-3, and don't have any minority candidates hired amongst the five vacancies, that's like some red flags should go up, especially in a league where 70% of the players are Black.
Yeah, I totally agree. So yeah, it's I don't know. We'll kind of see what happens going forward and what the NFL will do to kind of clearly it's not going to happen within the next season, but just some changes that they will hopefully make kind of going forward.
Yeah, I agree. And I will say this as an aside, but not to go down this rabbit hole. I do think that circling back to the player protest piece, that if perhaps there had been more strategy around that, this piece around the hiring of Black coaches could have been a demand of sorts. But unfortunately, because of how that transpired and the leadership around it, it just didn't develop to that concrete a set of demands in that way that they thought about in terms of the coaching piece. I think it was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I would agree with you there.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll continue to keep an eye on it. And hopefully, although it's clear that we're not going to have any new Black head coaches in the upcoming season, there's always next season. And yeah, I'm just hopeful that somehow the NFL can finally find a way to get it right. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I don't know how much a Rooney Rule needs to be modified. It just needs to be enforced.
Agreed.
And that comes out of the commissioner's office. Like, if the totally commissioner agree. Levied fines, and in the 15 or 16 year history of the Rooney Rule, only one team has actually been fined for violating the rule or operating outside the spirit of the rule. So perhaps that's really what needs to happen, is let's just talk about punishment for noncompliance. Yeah. Rather than it needs shoring up, because you really can't legislate a man's heart, but you can legislate his wallet.
and with these owners, I mean, you know,
the bottom line is what resonates with them. So
exactly.
Maybe that's something to consider. But I guess that we're nearing the end where we're about to wrap up. But coming up, we're going to have our last segment. We're going to give you all a little Black girl magic moment. And we're back. We're starting a new closing segment piece called Black Girl Magic Moment, where we highlight either our current or historical Black women, young ladies, girls, making a difference in the world of sport. And this time we want to highlight a young lady out of Troy, Alabama, that you probably have heard of if you've been following sports recently, Mayori Davenport. And Mayori was the topic of conversation because after having played for USA Basketball and having received some form of payment, I think it was in the amount of $850, $860, she didn't ask for it, but she was paid a check that she did cash, but subsequently did refund back to the organization. Well, the Alabama High School Athletics Association decided that that was a violation of the rule that warranted her eligibility for her remaining season to be compromised. And she's already been recruited and is headed to play for Coach Stringer at Rutgers. So it got a lot of national attention. But just like 2 weeks ago or so, she got a temporary restraining order, basically injunctive relief, stopping the Athletic Association's stopping her from playing. So she's actually been playing ball the past 2 weeks for her high school team, Charles Henderson, down in Troy. But just kudos to her for the fight. She really is I think, a hero of sorts. She got kind of unfairly tied up in mistakes made by the adults around her. So I'm glad to see that she's back on the court.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think it, her case, which is unfortunate, and we definitely hope that it works out in her favor, just kind of highlights, like you said, maybe some of the issues that may come into play with these types of rules and the potential to maybe try and rectify them, or, you know, at least in her case, where it was clearly an unknowing mistake and an admitted mistake on behalf of USA Basketball, just a way to resolve these matters where it's not punishing the student. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens for sure.
We will. And a couple of points. It's been interesting how even within the state of Alabama, folks have rallied around her. I mean, she and her parents were really brave about it. I mean, they went down to the legislature and lobbied for intervention and got a largely Republican legislature to on their side and as their advocates. So literally it's like everybody in the state of Alabama versus our athletics, high school athletic right. association. Another thing to look out for is that the fight isn't over for her. She received temporary injunctive relief. And after 10 days, what has to happen is the judge then typically, if there's an appeal of the injunction, the temporary injunction, 10 days later, the judge will perhaps hold another hearing and then determine whether to issue a permanent injunction. And if he were to issue the permanent injunction, then she would be able to play the rest of her season with, and her final season with Charles Henderson without incident. So I'm hoping, and I think that the 10 days might have expired yesterday. I mean, 2 days ago. So we should be hearing more on what the judge is going to do about the permanent injunction soon. So we'll continue to be on the lookout for news about that and keep wishing the best for her.
Definitely.
So Andrea, what do we got to tee up for the next episode?
So we're about, I guess, a little over 2 weeks away from Super Bowl. So that'll be an exciting time since it'll be, actually, we're 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today.
Which means
the activities actually start like
this coming weekend.
Later this week, the activities for Super Bowl will start.
Yep. So I think the 26th is when the festivities officially kick off. So yeah, okay. Super Bowl in Atlanta, February 3rd. So we'll be talking a little bit about that.
Maybe dabbling in a few Super Bowl week activities, perhaps.
Yes. Perhaps.
Perhaps.
Yeah, what else? So we'll be, so that'll close out kind of NFL season. And then moving towards, we'll be closer to the start of Major League Baseball and spring training. So we'll be talking a little bit about that since we'll be, I think, mid-late February is when spring training starts. Season starts late March. We'll be in college basketball mode and probably a little over a month removed from the or coming up on March Madness.
So yep.
Lots to discuss.
Absolutely. The end of the football season does not mean the end of stuff to talk about. And
we'll
certainly have that for you. Please be sure, we love the support we've been getting. Please be sure to go to our fan page on Facebook, which is Black Girls Vibe Tribe, and make a request to join. We'd be more than happy to have you. We're posting content every day and having conversations, and generally it's a pretty open and lighthearted group, I think you'll find. So hope to see you on our page and hope to see you or have you listening to this podcast. We're available on almost all platforms that you could think of with regard to podcasts. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, all of them.
We're everywhere.
We are everywhere.
Yeah.
And
I would be.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I'd be remiss to ask you since we were talking about Super Bowl, we've got the divisional playoffs coming up today. Who do you have?
Thank you. How did I almost forget that? My goodness, where is it? Woo, okay, yes. Yeah. So conference championships today. We have first at around 2 my time, 3 Eastern, and I guess, about noon Pacific. We got the Rams and the Saints playing down at the Superdome. I personally am taking the Saints.
Okay.
How about you?
I totally understand. I've got the Rams.
Okay. Well, then there it is. Yeah. There it is. It's not often we're not on the same page, but it does happen.
I know. And you know, part of it too, I'm clearly good with either one, but something about having the Saints in Atlanta for a Super Bowl, it's not going to go over well here.
Well, you know, and
it will be a good game.
And I've heard Saints fans say they want it because they want to come to Atlanta and act out. So
right.
They want to be in Atlanta acting out in front of Falcons fans. So I just kind of chuckled when I said that. And it's not, I'm not like a Saints fan like that. I just think that they've been so dominant. I know they've won the head-on matchup earlier in the regular season. But that Thomas is special. He is just special. And unless they, I understand that Akib Talib is going to be back from injury. But we'll see if he can stop him. I heard that they're going to go man-to-man on him and hope to kind of shut him down, with Talib being a very seasoned second, you know, member of the secondary. Like, maybe he'll have some strategies. I don't know. I've just seen Thomas do some really special things. So I got the Saints.
And okay. Then,
in the final game that the day, the AFC Championship, we have New England Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs. Andrew, who you got?
I am going for the Kansas City Chiefs all the way.
Same. Same.
Yeah. Same.
My disdain for one New England Patriot team won't allow me to do anything but cape up for the Chiefs. I like the Chiefs. I was going to be rocking with the Chiefs regardless. But yeah, anybody who knows me and where my sports fandom lies, they know I am not. I'm the anti-Patriots fan. So
yeah,
and I legit think that you know, I know they're playing with this supposed chip on their shoulder and blah 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 blah, blah, all of that. But yeah, they're not the team they once were, and they were very vulnerable throughout the playoffs last season, as quiet as it's kept. I watched the game they played against the Jaguars, and the Jags had a dead to rights until the fourth quarter. Kind of like that unfortunate Super Bowl game a couple of years ago against the Falcons.
Ooh,
but we're not going to talk about that. No.
Yeah, still too soon. Still too soon. I mean,
yeah, like too soon, and just had to deal with the Alabama thing, so I can't go back to a painful loss anytime soon, but I feel like there are teams that kind of let the Patriots get in their heads, and their play begins to suffer, and that's how the Patriots are able to get. So they more win the psychological game, but yeah, teams have had their number, and I'm going to give Andy Reid the credit for being able to come with the strategy to kind of put the throttle on and keep it on their necks the entire game.
I agree. And I definitely want to see, you know, Andy Reid have and the Chiefs have some postseason success, as they have so far, and got a great quarterback in Mahomes. So, yeah, Chiefs. Go Chiefs.
Go Chiefs. So that's it. We are, well, I guess Andrea is predicting or is looking out for a Rams-Chiefs Super Bowl. I'm an advocate for a Saints Chiefs Super Bowl. And yeah, I will need 2 weeks to tell you who I think wins that matchup. But in the meantime, those are our predictions for today. Anything you got to say on the closing out, Andrea?
No, again, but we're looking forward to Super Bowl and what we'll get into during that time. But yeah.
Awesome.
Subscribe and stay tuned and join the conversation.
That's right. Thank you guys, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, we will.